last meeting, we received 11 more complaints in the alcohol mailbox, along with one email supporting the licensee. And all 14 of those emails from the public are attached to this document. I apologize that when I sent you this tab ahead of the meeting, it didn't have any of the attachments. I had attached the attachments to the wrong document. So that has been corrected, and what you have in your on your computer has all of the attachments. There's a couple other issues also relating to this license. In early June, it came to my attention that this restaurant or eating place license was applying for and being issued restaurant caterers permits in order to hold musical concerts in their large yard that surrounds the restaurant. They had been issued a restaurant caterers permits for musical concerts three times in May. And once this came to my attention in early June, I informed the licensee that the restaurant caterer's permit is authorizing the licensee to sell or dispense beer or wine before and during service of food provided by the licensee at a designated location for a banquet or dinner event held off of the holder's licensed premises. A concert is not a banquet or dinner event. This had some attention in 2016 when the previous director had ceased issuing this type of permit to a music festival in Chicken because the event did not meet the requirements of the permit type, but apparently it didn't get entirely cleaned up because Mr. Thomas informed me that they had received restaurant caterer permits for these events in 2018, and he notes that he purchased this business early in 2018, even though that was much sooner than the transfer was approved by the board. So it does appear that many of these events had been permitted in error, but past errors do not justify current or future errors. So Mr. Thomas and I communicated about the appropriate types of permits he needed for musical acts on his property. And he was able to start partnering with a beverage dispensary license. Although, as noted, these events are causing a great deal of consternation in the community. In addition to the multiple public complaints that we have received, we reached out to the Alaska State Troopers to see whether they had been receiving complaints as well. Hope is not an organized community. It is not a municipality. And it is in the Kenai Peninsula Borough. So the borough is the local government, and the Alaska State Troopers would be the law enforcement for that area. The Seward Post supervisor provided a list of Hope concerns, which has been attached, as well as a spreadsheet of Creek Bend complaints, and noted that dispatch was told, after June 22nd, dispatch was told to refer complaints to a different number. I don't know what that number was or what, if any, complaints were received after June 22nd. They also stated that for a while they had so many complaints coming in that they stopped pulling ARMS numbers. In addition to those issues, an NOV was issued to Creek Bend Company for submitting a permit application with false information. As noted in the NOV, Mr. Thomas indicated that a certain permit was for a wedding, although in fact no wedding took place. He apparently held what was seemed to be some sort of engagement party, followed by an unrelated public concert, for which he had sold several hundred tickets. Even though he had told us that there was a wedding. So this is a lot of issues for the board to address, and the board has the authorization, if it finds it's in the best interests of the public, to deny permits or to impose conditions or restrictions on permits. So there are some possible suggestions that the board may wish to consider at the top of page 3, including limiting the number of caterers' permits that could be issued at this location in any given year, limiting the hours of such permits, requiring additional restroom facilities, requesting me to write an accusation based on some of the issues stated in this memo. And again, I would note, you know, Mr. Thomas was authorized to begin operating this license in July of 2018, but not profit from it. But we have a couple of different statements from him that it appears that he's been operating the license long before it was actually transferred to him.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry, I would also note that the licensee's please. Response is also attached to the tab.
We saw it. Go ahead.
Hi, Janet Weltzine, attorney for Creek Bend. I actually brought copies of the licensee's response for the board. I don't know if anybody would prefer a hard copy because I couldn't access, and I still can't as of this morning, any of the attachments for this board tab. The licensee is on the phone, and I think it might be best if I see some remarks and then kind of almost read his response, because I think it answers a lot of some of the allegations made in the director's report. As preliminary matter, I just want to clarify, you know, these are two separate issues. The public concerns are one issue, and then how these events should be permitted is a separate issue. I want to kind of not combine the two, because I think that's when it gets into using the interpretation of the regulations to kind of dictate the outcome of whether or not something's approved, when it should be, you know, whether it meets the regulations or not, and then the public concerns are for the board to consider. So, and also to address some of the other, and I can let Stephen talk to this more, but Stephen's been working on and off the establishment since 2009. So he's been with this company before he actually entered into a purchase and sale agreement for a long time. So with that, I'll turn to the licensee's response, and I'll just kind of read through it in his words so you can kind of understand where this family is coming from. Dear Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office, I reviewed the two public complaints in the July 29th alcohol mailbox. The two complainants are Shelly and Rihanna Christopher. And I will note that 4 to 5, I did see the public comments in the mailbox for this period, and 4 to 5 of them were the same name, last name, Christopherson, as Shelly and Rihanna. In mid-June 2019, after operating and submitting permits for approvals for over 2 years and engaging in 20 successful events with no licensing problems, our company was hit with a severe economic blow that came out of nowhere. After 2 years of engaging in the same course of conduct with AMCO, with no warning or time frame for adjustment, I was informed that AMCO was changing the way it would be permitting our specific events that we hold on the parcel behind the restaurant. Historically, we used AB06, as we always provide dinner service with our chef cooking at the events. But in mid-June, Creek Bend was told that some of the music events did not qualify for the dinner event, and therefore asked us to use form AB04, partnering with a BDL holder to cater the alcohol. And I'm going to stop right there, because I'll point out that change right there has costed Creek Bend thousands and thousands of dollars, because they clearly can't benefit from the alcohol sales when they're partnering with a BDL. The weekend of this NOV was literally days after finding out that AMCO has changed the interpretation of the dinner caterers event permit. We had no previous notice of this change, nor have we seen any regulation or interpretation memorandums, policy statements, or changes in the actual regulations or applicable statutes. Following the news that the dinner permits would no longer be allowed to be utilized for its music events, Creek Bend quickly informed AMCO of its concerns created by the sudden change. Primary concern is that we've already relied on the past 2 years of AMCO's course of conduct, issuing permits as we have been accustomed to. Therefore, we relied on the well-established course of conduct for the previous 2 years to our detriment. Obviously, like any business owner would do, we have already scheduled and booked a series of events, and the complications created from making changes in a short period of time due to a change in interpretation with no public notice by AMCO. Musicians with plane ticket schedules, scheduled customers already purchasing and renting lodging in hope, employees losing out on shift and compensation, the complications of an event with no alcohol when customers were expecting it. The list of negative impacts on our business and our vendors go on and on and on. The June 14th, 15th original permit event title was was named Hope Social Club Wedding Shower / Concert. So just to give you some information on this, Stephen and his fiance, they're getting married out of state, but they live in Hope year-round, and they wanted to have a wedding event that their Alaskan family and friends could come to. And as owners of the establishment, clearly they also wanted their customers to come after this private wedding event, shower, and then following with a concert. It was all disclosed in the original permit application. After the many conversations discussing the weekend, Creekman was asked by AMCO staff to remove any mention of live music from the wedding weekend permit. This is illustrated in email correspondence that are dated 6/11 and 6/12. With the intentions of the weekends were fully transparent, and Creekman simply followed the guidance provided by AMCO. There was a wedding and dinner event. There were invitations sent out prior. There were 18 family members who flew in from out of state to attend. Creekman does not admit the claim that we were untruthful on our permit. We don't admit the allegation because it's simply not true. We are business people. We are unsure why AMCO, which falls under the Commission of Commerce, are making allegations in an NOV that we are lying. Also questioning our marriage reception for Alaska friends and family, when it's normal for people who are marrying away from their home state and city to have the reception in their hometown, there's no nefarious intent there. And we would appreciate it if we were treated like business people as opposed to criminals. Not that it's anybody's business but our own, my fiance and I are getting married out of state where a lot of our Alaskan friends and families are unable to attend. We had the reception event for our Alaskan friends and family, including our staff. We love Hope. They live there year round. They're not, they don't just live there in the summertime. We wanted to have a piece of our wedding events in our Hope home. We don't appreciate our religion, values, honesties, and integrities to be grilled and disrespected by the AMCO investigators. The whole situation was confusing. The first email we got from Investigator Hamilton about this particular weekend didn't make sense. He mentioned the wrong dates, the wrong events, and it took time up with our legal counsel and our time to address and finally sort out what he was digging for. We are a small business that offers year-round employment to this community. We're not lying or cheating our way through the system. We always want to keep communication between AMCO and Creekman fully transparent. We have nothing to hide. We simply want to run our business with confidence again. It is disappointing that a misinformed town resident informed AMCO that there was no wedding event and that was taken at their word over the operators themselves. More bizarre is that the only two public complaints in the July 29th mailbox were two individuals who are clearly related. Even stranger is Investigator Hamilton's response to Rihanna Christopher's son, where he states, quote, "We advised him that he had to team up with a beverage dispensary license, and now things could get worse." Why would any AMCO official give a licensee direction and then tell a community member that due to that direction, the problem could get worse? We are at a loss. AMCO is a state agency and should be promoting commerce, small, locally owned businesses like ours. Actions we are taking to prevent this reoccurrence of this violation. Our actions relating to special events and wedding permits the year prior to and then the months since the weekend in June illustrate that Creekman closely follows AMCO guidance to fill out the proper special events / caterers permit. When AMCO's interpretation to the dining permit changed the summer immediately prior to the June weekend in question, we are given new guidance on how to permit events. For non-weddings, we are asked to have a BBL holder cater the liquor at our events. Given the events are already on our summer calendar, we immediately worked and found a quality BDL to cater the events, the non-dinner events. Our past practice now from the last several weeks proves that actions have been taken to prevent reoccurrence. The situation had the opportunity to happen, but only because of a short-term issue the request to change our permitting process created. Moving forward, in the short term, we have a solid game plan for permitting events. Dinner catering permits remain available for weddings and BDL catering permits for other special events. Given the understanding and expectations both Creekman and AMCO have regarding permits moving forward, this situation will not reoccur. Since then, we've filed for a combined 6 to 8 permits since this event and has not had any issues. And then the next section of the licensee's response is addressing the public complaints. So if there's not any questions on the first section, I'll go on to the second. Okay. Creek Bend Company is a dynamic hospitality business that covers two properties in the tourist town of Hope. It includes a lodge, a market with services, RV park, and a restaurant with a large event space. The lodge and market and the restaurant are two of the only businesses open in Hope year-round. They are both very important parts of our community. Given the fact that Hope has been found and it's now on the map, our goal is to make it a more sustainable and proactive Hope moving towards the future. We struggle with many of the very same issues that almost every small town encounters. Creek Bend wants to create a more year-round jobs for people to be able to live and work in Hope. We want to tackle the problems in our community has faced in the last 15 years. Creek Bend is always thinking about its impact on the community and how we can positively impact our local community as well as ensure positive experiences for our tourists, who are also very important to our community. The Creek Bend and its events and the event space behind the restaurant have come under a microscope this summer by several property owners in Hope. This select group has gone on to file numerous complaints with the troopers and with AMCO. Many of the claims are disappointing, tactless, and untrue. And I would also note that in your marijuana or your alcohol mailbox that you have in your packet, there is a community member that wrote an email that explains that sometimes some of these people that are not fans of Creek Bend will come to the events and slash tires, and they actually have pictures of that. And so I encourage you to look at that. As in every small town, when someone doesn't like something, they go to extreme measures to harm someone or someone's business. It has forced our business to fully defend itself and to take extensive time providing explanations to offices such as AMCO. A very important note to make is that these complaints all stem from a very few concentrated weekends. There's an attempt to paint every weekend in Hope as crazy, loud, and full of people, and that's simply not true. Each summer, whether it's a community event like the Bragging Trailways weekend or a weekend in which the Sea View Cafe, Dirty Skillet, or Creek Bend host a popular band, there are around 3 to 6 weekends that are noticeably busier than the rest. And as an economy and residents that rely heavily on these busy weekends, that's not an unreasonable ask. Outside of those few weekends each summer, Hope is extremely quiet year-round. Creek Bend's restaurants and events are held out back. They're a family-friendly, safe environment. One would find a mom and a 5-year-old blowing bubbles. Next would find 4 guide friends next to a 75-year-old couple dancing to music. We run a completely legal business that works with AMCO closely and regularly to ensure compliance. Our business is a great economic boost as well as a community supporter for our local school, community events, and more. We are under attack by a few biased households, many of which don't live in Hope 365 days a year. We have a small community organization in which leadership has held an anti-business, anti-growth bias for years. The Sea View Cafe came under a similar attack just a few years ago by these same families, and now the target has shifted to Creek Bend. Just like every other Alaskan town, we have sawmills running, roosters crowing in the early mornings, airplanes passing at inopportune times. However, as a community, we have to respect our neighbors and don't bother harass them just because we don't support something 100%. This is about compromise. Hope has struggled with many small tourist town problems for 10 years now. There has been a parking issue in the downtown area for 10 years. There has been fear of not having enough bathrooms in Hope as Hope continues to grow and more fishermen and tourists find their way to Hope. Creek Bend is essential to continue to tackle the growing pains and work with other business owners as well as community members to be more proactive in making Hope stronger and moving into the next decade. Creek Bend alone has added 40 more parking spaces on its own property just between 2018 and 2019, and we plan to add numerous more during the off-season. We are also working with a newly formed community committee here in town to find more public parking solutions. Unlike the complainant state, which they say that we only have 2 rent-a-cans, we actually have 6 rent-a-cans, and on larger weekends each summer, we bring in additional units. In regards to noise complaints, there's extreme claims being made that such as 120 decibel readings from over half a mile away. This isn't true. The noise levels at their peak as live music is not sustained is around 85 to 90 decibels right near the speakers. You can hold a full conversation with your neighbor 50 feet from the speakers without raising your voice. Below is a summary of the sound level aspects. They've tried to control the sound. So they've hired a professional sound technician that works each of the live events. This way the band doesn't have control of the sound and cannot turn it up past that 90 decibels. Sound reading, 90 up to 95. Sound readings peak at 85 to 95 decibels when you're in close proximities with the speakers. Below the next page, we have a chart that kind of shows you the different decimals, and we said, you know, we put 120 here as standing next to a jet engine. Well, 120 is actually standing next to a thunderclap or a chainsaw. 150 would be a jet takeoff, but we're lower. We're at 90 to 80, and so that's, you know, a Boeing 737 overhead or a power motor. Those are the kinds of range that we're in. Readings at the readings on the closest neighborhood properties peak between 60 and 80 decimals. And let's keep in mind that during a concert, music isn't sustained. It's a 4-minute song followed by a 3-minute break of the band talking. On a music night, it usually starts around 8 p.m. and ends around 11 p.m. Bands usually take 15 to 20-minute breaks. So we're literally talking about no more than 2 to 2.5 hours of event with the music. So Creepin finds the combination of ending the music at 11 and the fact that we only have live music 15 to 16 nights a year, and the fact that we will continue to work on noise levels to find the optimum level for all parties to be a very fair compromise. We do absolutely have the right to host live music events here and to continue to benefit our local economy. We are going to continue to work with those who have filed complaints to find compromises. And so with that, I would just ask that the suggestions that the director put in page 3, you know, some of them, I don't know if they're AMCO's place to tell a restaurant how many porta potties they need. Maybe that's a better conversation to have with this new community committee that's been formed, and maybe we could engage in a memorandum of understanding with the community committee to kind of outline some of those. You know, how many porta potties should you have? What hours should these events stop at? What? Let's set a decimal limit. But I think that should be a discussion with the community committee that's just been formed, and they're really trying to tackle community issues in Hope. And with that, I would ask maybe if Michael, if you could unmute the speaker to Stephen. All right, did you have anything else to add?
Conference is no longer in listen only mode.
Stephen, did you have anything else to add?
No, just a note that I've been working in Hope since 2009 and only been working at this property since we started the talk to purchase the property.
I apologize. I misunderstood. So, thank you.
Yeah, but point being that I've been around Hope and have a real understanding of, you know, our growing pains and what it will take for more sustainable Hope. We are currently an unincorporated town, and you know, our fishing spots are being discovered more, and we're clearly on the map now. There's a lot of things that as a community we need to work together to grow.
Thank you.
Stephen, it's Bob Klein. While I have you, would you describe the this new community group, who's in it? What's it trying to do?
Yeah, so our kind of our community council or the closest thing we have to a governing body, Hope Inc., heard many of these concerns, and as an action directly relating to it, they formed a committee of members on all sides of this issue, folks who are business owners, folks that may be on the side of many of these concerns, as well as kind of a neutral, somebody who's worked in state government before. And so that that committee has met now every other Saturday. So it's either been two or three meetings. And yeah, they just have worked to prioritize concerns for our town and then start to create, you know, proactive solutions that find compromise for all. And yeah, so that committee has already been organized and has met multiple times.
Thank you. Okay, Director, you in your letter, you've got four suggestions. How did you arrive at those?
Mr. Chair, I was looking at the topics that the complaints seemed focused on. So complaints were focused on people doing inappropriate bodily functions in the woods. That sort of led to the porta potties issue. People complained about noise going later than 11. The 11 o'clock cutoff has always been for the restaurant license permit. And once you have a caterer's permit, there isn't a limitation on hours. So, you know, Creek Bend has indicated that they intend to stop their events at 11, but that isn't a requirement in the statute. So that was the thought behind maybe limiting the hours. Limiting the number of events was trying to address the community concerns about frequency, clearly. I struggled with issues relating to people who are drunk wandering around town, passing out on other people's property. You know, you can't really be sure that that is that situation is arriving from events at Creek Bend, because people can bring their own alcohol, they can drink their alcohol in their car at a different bar. So while I did consider things about enhanced security, it didn't seem appropriate to require one licensee who's having an event to provide sort of police for the rest of the town for things that are happening off of his premises or his permitted premises. So I really struggled with how to address that issue, because that certainly is the biggest public safety concern is, you know, drunk driving, and people who are intoxicated wandering around. But again, you can't necessarily pin that to these particular events. So I didn't have any suggestions relating to that particular issue.
Thank you.
So through the chair, this is Glenn Brady. And I'm not sure exactly who to direct this to, possibly a director or licensee, but the events in question with live music that were those conducted under the restaurant caterer's permit or a beverage dispensary caterer's permit?
So, Mr. Brady, I would refer you to the bottom of page one, so you can see that there were three. So on May 5th, live music with Great American Taxi under a restaurant caterers, you can see that. And it changes right in June, where this issue came to my attention and said, you know, a concert is not appropriate for a restaurant caterer's permit.
Got it. Okay. Sorry. Thank you for that. I'm trying to take all of this in through the chair. This is kind of generally directed at the licensee and the board, but clearly there's, as the licensee described, you know, there's efforts to try to grow a business and be responsive to the community, and that's good. The challenge I'm seeing here is clearly something is not right, and I'm there's concern regarding the misapplication of the restaurant caterer's permit for these functions, and that those permits were issued erroneously, but then that was resolved. And I want to make certain that there is not the misconception that this is some right. And so while the statement was made that it is their right to have live music, certainly that may be true. However, the sale of alcohol is not a right. It is a privilege. And that's part of the, I think, where I'm coming into a rub here, because this is problematic in a much larger sense, even unrelated to this license, because if you take certain circumstances throughout the state and start misapplying or distorting things, it creates issues in the business environment. And that's more concerning. And again, it's general in nature, not specific to this licensee. So I think while the issue is specific to this licensee, I would recommend that the director take a much closer look at the specific applications, and keeping in mind that this is a restaurant eating place license. And that's, I think, you know, and then if the live music events are going to be conducted under a caterer's permit, that certainly that removes the restrictions, and that the licensee, in that case, the whomever is the BDL licensee, be responsive to the community, and knowing that in some cases they're not going to be able to get full satisfaction or ameliorate people and their issues in a small community. But that being said, there seems to be a pattern here that is a little concerning. So I would urge the licensee to really, as they've stated, continue to engage the community council and try to be responsive, because clearly there's a lot of people unhappy, and we're trying to maintain order here, so and promote business at the same time. So with that, I'll get off my soapbox. I don't have a specific recommendation aside from please adhere to the rules. So thank you.
Other comments?
Charlie, go ahead. Thank you. How many individuals have lodged complaints? Do we know that number?
Through the chair, Mr. Cross, I believe there are 13 emails, but it is possible that some of them may be duplicative from, a couple people have emailed twice. I do not know how many people, I don't know the cross between the emails that AMCO has received versus who has made complaints to the state troopers.
I see. And I noted that I saw that the Alaska State Troopers have stopped issuing ARMS numbers, which are report numbers, incident numbers for calls for service or complaints. So it seems to me that it seems to be a limited number of complainants, and we have a few different issues. The way in which the permits were issued, that seemed to be fixed. And then crimes occurring, whether it's trespassing or vandalism or and those seem to be public safety matters separate from what this board deals with. And if the Alaska State Troopers are receiving these calls for service, that's, you know, the things that intoxicated people do or angry residents do is for the Alaska State Troopers to deal with. And that's why I'm curious about the number of complainants versus the frequency of them. And if the state troopers have a solution that deals with crimes, people's behavior, because it seems to be outside of the scope of this board.
Through the chair, I would echo what Mr. Cross just said. I think there's numerous issues that are being brought up here. Some are public safety concerns, some are community concerns. The board, all we can really look at is NOV, and if we really drill down to the language on the NOV, that it talks about whether there was a wedding there or not, based on the language that was written on the application, it's not clear what really the intent was to the applicant. I look at the past emails, it talks about a wedding that weekend, then it says a wedding event, then it says a wedding after party. It's very unclear. I would speak to the applicant in that to just put a fair warning out there. Lack of clarity in any kind of business action creates confusion to the public and then weakens your ability to advocate in the future for your ability to stand and request those permits. So if they're not clear in their application process, that limits our ability in the future to have confidence in what they're writing. So I'd recommend clarity on that. If it's a wedding, put wedding. Wedding event, wedding rehearsal, wedding after party. The more you read this, there's 7 or 8 different versions they use. That's part of the confusion. Secondly, and I think it's been echoed many times, the numerous public safety concerns in the community regarding alcohol. I can tell you, I used to supervise that region for the Alaska State Troopers. There are many different groups that use that town on the weekends, not just that event. There's a state campsite at the end of the road. There is a stream there that's known as a fishing location. There's mining camps there, residences. So I'm cautious to pin all of the events in the community on that establishment. And I don't even think that's in the purview of the board. So other than the NOV, I think the other issues probably need to be addressed through public safety. Like it sounds like community members are trying, and through that community council that's trying to stand up.
And for me, the one bright spot is, and the newest, is that we have this group of, in effect, community council starting to look at it and hopefully make some recommendations. I think that's where the changes should come. It'd be a little premature for us to look at all these letters and come up with conditions at this point. Let's give them a chance to work it and see what they come up with. Anything else, Jenna?
Nope. Just that I'll keep the board and Erica abreast on if we can come up with a memorandum of understanding with the community council.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Do we need a break? Yes. Okay, we need a break. So let's take 10 minutes. Thank you. Okay, 10 minutes are up. Let's go back to work. And we left off with tab number 10, licensing report. Michael?
All right, so I did not address our staff changes that have occurred because Director McConnell already went over those, but we too in the licensing team are very excited that our senior examiner, Jane Sawyer, has moved to the regulation specialist position. We are currently recruiting for the vacant examiner position that should close on Wednesday, and we'll try to get that filled as soon as possible. In my report, I have a reminder about the waiver of minimum operating requirements. Those are going to be coming due for this calendar year very soon. More information about that is in my report. Just remember to get it in by October 25th. Otherwise, that $1,000 late fee for this year will be assessed. Alcohol renewals are coming up. I know everyone is very excited about those. They're required to be sent out by no later than November 1st of each year. I would like to make a correction to my report. My report states that starting on October 1st, any transfer application submitted will need to include a renewal. That has been changed to November 1st. I apologize for that mistake. So any transfer application submitted after November 1st will require a renewal to be deemed complete. Just a reminder, Whatever email you put on your renewal application will be the one that we send corrections to. So make sure your junk folder is checked after you sent it to us. And there's some statistics about permits and the alcohol applications, and I'm happy to answer any questions from the board.
This is Sarah calling
you.
I just wanted you guys to know I'm on the line.
That was Sarah. Sarah, is that you online?
That's me. I can barely hear you, but yes, I'm here.
Excellent. Welcome. And then,
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, just for the purpose of clarifying the record, could you just announce who is on the line specifically?
As I promised you earlier, Sarah Erickson has joined us. She is our board member from Kenai, board member at large. So, thank you. Thank you through the chair, Michael, for that report. This might be another general comment, is as a licensee, it's always been a little concerning, and I've heard this from other industry folks as well, and it might be something for us as a board to look at in the future. It's not a criticism, so please take it as constructive commentary, that the timing of the renewals and the operation, I've found myself in a slightly uneasy position with many of my licenses operating with effectively an expired license hanging on the wall. And if there was a way for us as a board to shift the renewals to occur, or the communication and that whole process, and I think it gets a little earlier. I know there's the receipt, and there's some interim, pending the board's approval of the renewals and all those things that have to happen statutorily. Create a more streamlined workflow, and this is another pitch for that sort of document management we had talked about that I know was budgeted, and I'll speak to our department we're housed under, that this might be one area that we could be a lot more responsive to our licensees and streamline some of the renewals and the timing and the paperwork if we had some better technology-based communication tools at our disposal. So I'm hoping to be on the record about making a pitch for supporting that to help the staff engage our licensees and smooth a lot of these processes out. So, but again, appreciate the reporting and all the hard work the staff does on this. Filling out the stuff is difficult, but reviewing them all is also difficult, and the work you guys do is appreciated. Thank you. Go ahead, Sarah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Sarah Oates with Alaska Char. I would echo Mr. Brady's comments, and I realize you already passed this section of the agenda and maybe it's out of order, but might recommend that the board consider adding that to your legislative requests, is expenditure authority or something for a licensing system, because that would be extremely beneficial to our industry and has been long needed, and to the staff.
Anything else on licensing? Okay, let's move on to tab 11, which is under board consideration, the three-year review of TIPS.
Director. Thank you, Mr. Chair. At the last meeting, the board approved the in-person server education course offered by TIPS, and TIPS indicated they were going to then make commensurate changes to their online server education course. They did that. They submitted what they call passports to allow each board member to review the online course, which I provided to each board member on August 2nd. To allow the board to review that course online. So they are now seeking approval of their online server education course.
Go ahead.
So through the chair, so ironically, I did follow that link and got partway through the test before it crashed on me. and sent in a technical support request. But no, my personal review of the content seemed appropriate, and the delivery and the verification, at least of the identity, seemed to be as rigorous and robust as it could be given an online delivery system. I still have, I think, I don't know if it's specific to this agenda tab, but the zip code reporting and the question in, I think it was in a later section about the question of whether or not it's where the licensee is or the server. And given that people move around and whatnot. So, but no, I think the program itself seemed to meet all the statutory requirements that I saw. So I would motion to approve the online TIPS program.
Do I have a second?
I second.
I'll second that, Mrs. Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah. I have her on record, so. Okay, further discussion? Hearing none, let's vote. And since Sarah's here, I need to do this roll call. Sarah, how do you vote?
I vote to approve, so yes.
Thank you. Glenn?
Yes.
Charlie?
Yes. Yes.
Rex? Rex is yes, and I'll vote yes. Motion is carried. Thank you. Okay, we come now to our regular spot in the meeting agenda. Let's handle gold miners again. This is tabs 12, 13, and 14. Director.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What is before the board is the renewal of two licenses, license 4380, which is a restaurant or eating place license, and license 4526, which is a beverage dispensary tourism license. Both of these licenses are located in Houston. We came into information that the licensees, Gold Miners Lodge Restaurant and Motel LLC, which is owned by Brian and Sandra Gautier, that they leased both the property and the liquor licenses to John and Inthira Zivaki back in 2017. This is a violation of AS 04-11-450A and C, which says a person other than a licensee may not have a direct or indirect financial interest in the business for which a license is issued, and C, a license may not be leased by a licensee to another person, partnership, limited liability, organization, or corporation. The criteria relating to renewal at AS 04-11-330A5 states that the renewal of a license shall be denied if the requirements of AS 04-11-420-450 relating to zoning, ownership of a license, and financing of the licensee have not been met. So my recommendation to the board is that the renewal of these licenses should be denied. This is the third time this has been on the agenda, and the board has heard from the Gautiers and from council, also from Mayor Thompson of the City of Houston. There's a great deal of information provided in the tabs.
Now in listen-only mode.
There have been transfer applications submitted for these licenses, but they were not ready for this meeting because of very complicated security interest documents that were submitted with the applications. Thank you.
Director, you're recommending denying the renewals, so that would make the transfers moot?
Yes, Mr. Chair. But I would also note that the new owners of this property could then apply for a beverage dispensary tourism license. It came to our attention through the transfer applications that these two licenses are co-located, which is not something that is has been acceptable to the board, except in very specific circumstances. You've allowed co-location of different manufacturing license types. It appears that years and years ago, the staff was aware of this, but I think it's been missed for years because of the addresses of the two licenses are expressed differently. One is a mile marker address and the other is a sort of normal street number, street name. So my recommendation is renewal for violating the sections of statute that I noted. But again, I would repeat that in the future, the new owner, when he is ready to begin operating, could apply for a new BDL tourism license.
Thank you. Is there anyone on the line to speak to this?
When you put the board back down on all four wheels, does it not break the blade because it's bent? Is it touching the ground?
Hello, this is Danielle Dalrymple for the hearing.
Yes.
I'm getting some feedback here.
With it on its side, can you try to...
Can you mute your phones, please? Well, okay, let's try this again. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't want you to start.
Gold Miners Lodge Restaurant and Motel.
Wire.
I'm sorry, could you hold on for just a second? Taking minutes. Sir?
And then just try to push the starter cord.
I think we're going to have to recall it. All right, anyone who is actively listening to the meeting, we're going to have to hang up and call back in because someone has failed to mute their phones. So we'll call back in. Thank you.
Yes.
Dana Lynn, are you back with us?
Yes, I am. Are we ready to proceed? I think that we need to make sure that they're on the line as well.
Yes, Brian and Sandy, Gauthier, we're both here.
Okay, thanks.
Go ahead, please.
Thank you. I did a couple of things that I wanted to first. The director mentioned something about a co-location issue. We have not received any sort of notice on that issue, and I'm not going to address it here. We were not aware that was going to be discussed at this meeting, and we weren't given any. I did want to give the board an update on our status. The director has indicated that a transfer application has been submitted. I wanted to talk a little bit about the timing on that, and then I'll address the issues with respect to the premises and the lease that the director has come into information about. So on August 15th, John Zavacki, through his company Jazz Co. Investments LLC, submitted a transfer application for the liquor licenses, and it was my understanding through Daryl Thompson, his attorney, that there was an issue with publication and it had to be republished. So at that point, it had been published in the Anchorage Daily News the first part of August, and then it was recently resubmitted for publication. on beginning September 1 and with the last date of publication to be on 9/15. It's my understanding that all of the other documents requested by the by the office have been submitted, including a document that was the commercial lease of purchase option addendum and assignments executed by the parties. This document actually is to correct the Scrivener's error in the lease option that was originally signed between the parties. The document was designed to be a two-part document. That was a lease, and two was an option. And those two dual purposes were put into the same document. Term lease, there was just a Scrivener's error where the license was included in some of the lease language when it was intended by both parties to be a part of the option portion of that document, not the lease portion of the document. And so with the transfer application, a document reflecting the true intent of the parties back in 2017 was corrected, as well as an assignment of those rights from the Zavakis individually to their company, Jazco Investment, LLC. And I have, obviously, the Gauthiers can testify as to the intent of the parties back in 2017. But again, that addendum was executed by the parties and included in the transfer application, which would address the NOV for violation of AS 411-450. Documents were resubmitted yesterday, September 9th, obviously not in time for consideration by the board, but the documents would be relevant to this discussion about any sort of violation. But with that correction, again, Scrivener's error, the Gauthiers are interested in having their renewal approved so that the transfer application can be considered at the next meeting, and that this transaction can get put behind both of them. And if the board would like to see that addendum, commercial lease addendum, we would be. To the director back on
Daryl Lynn, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, if you can hear me or not.
The sitka composer Ed Littlefield, brought to you by the Alaska Hold Music Project. The Alaska Hold Music Initiative has been led by representative.
We pay extra for that musical background.
You know, it's the Humanities Council, State Alaska Department of Administration.
Somebody has a phone on hold instead of on mute.
Do we want to try this one more time?
And, yeah, I'm for-
and when people get back on, we'll have a little admonition.
All right, we're going to have to call back in. We apologize, but all right, we'll see everybody in a minute.
Into conference.
All right. So everybody who has dialed in online, please be very mindful of putting your phones on mute if you're not speaking. Please do not put your